Governor Scott Walker and the Group Insurance Board are recommending that state government self-insure for health care. Although state officials say it could save $60 million by mid-2019, others warn that the change could be risky. To discuss the self-insurance plan, thanks to Lisa Ellinger, Director of the Employee Trust Fund's Office of Strategic Health Policy. Lisa, welcome to Wisconsin High.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Before we look at a short video that gives some basics,
right.
How many employees and retirees are covered?
Sure. So our program covers about 250,000 members, primarily in the state of Wisconsin. That breakdown is about 70,000 active employees and their dependents, obviously, and about 40,000 retirees.
And the are they all state workers or state plus local?
Right. So we have both state and some participating local government employers. So again, about 70,000 state employees, about 12,000 local employees.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I have found your videos on the ETF site very helpful.
Good.
So let's play about a minute and a half of that that just lays the groundwork for our discussion.
Great.
Okay? Thank you.
Self-insurance simply means that instead of the state paying health insurance companies a fixed premium, ETF will use third-party administrators to pay healthcare costs directly, as they currently do with three self-insured benefit programs: pharmacy, uniform dental, and the statewide It's Your Choice Access Plan. After much deliberation, the board reached the decision to both regionalize and self-insure the program. Why regions? The board wanted to increase access to quality providers throughout the state, while ensuring members can keep their current providers. They also wanted to streamline program administration, simplify program information for participants, and control costs. Currently, the health plans choose where they will provide services. In the new program structure, the state will be separated into four coverage regions: North, South, East, and West. Health plans will be required to serve the entire region. And don't forget the bottom line: cost savings and transparency. The board estimates taxpayer savings of about $60 million from 2017 to 2019 without reducing member benefits, with similar savings expected in future years. This will help control future premium increases and will help to maintain the current benefit package.
Okay, those are the basics, Lisa. Mm-hmm. But I know from watching your videos that there are some basic questions that affected employees and retirees have. So let's work through those questions first.
Okay.
First of all, they want to know, and you've heard it, will my premiums go up? What's the answer?
Right. No, hopefully not. That's part of the reason we're pursuing self-insuring the program, is that over the past several years, we have had to shift additional costs to state employees and our retirees in terms of higher premium contributions, co-pays, co-insurance. And part of the goal of self-insuring is to rein in that future cost growth.
And now they're asking, will my co-pays go up?
Right. And again, hopefully the answer is no. A driving motivation for this is to be able to maintain the benefits that our employees and retirees are used to, and also not have additional premium increases as we move forward.
And the third, perhaps most common question is, can I keep my doctors and my medical professionals?
I think that is probably the number one question that we hear from our members. And as we say in the video, I'm glad you showed that, 98% of the current providers that are available will be available in the new program. And in addition to that, more providers will be available than are currently available. And the reason we know that is in the bids that we collected to select the winning vendors for the restructured program, we provided a list of our current providers and asked them to indicate which would be available in the new networks. And so that's where those numbers come from, is 98% of the current providers will continue to be available.
Well, in the interest of getting out the most information possible, what is the ETF website where people can watch both those videos?
Yeah, etf.wi.gov.
Okay, thank
Great.
You. That,
sure.
that took care of that.
Yeah.
What is the average demographic profile of the active state or local employee? Is it a woman in her 30s, 40s? Is it a male?
Yeah, I don't think our population is that distinct from an average large employer, so we trend slightly female. Our average age is mid-upper 40s, so pretty in line with what you would see with most large employers.
And how many dependents?
Yeah, an average family plan is around 2.5 members.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Well, the basic premise here is right now the state pays 17 HMOs to deliver health care to oversee, and the change would, well, go ahead, lay out, even though the video said it, it's pretty complex. So.
No, you're absolutely right. So we work with 17 health plans in our current fully insured structure. In the new proposal, we would minimize that to be just working with 6 winning vendors. We would divide the state into 4 regions,
right,
and also have a statewide, nationwide vendor that would be available on top of that. So in some regions, you would have that statewide vendor and a regional vendor available. In other regions, you'd have the statewide vendor and multiple carriers available.
Who negotiates the discounts for a specific surgery or lab test or medical procedure?
That is what these, and to make sure that I'm not saying acronyms without defining them, TPAs or third-party administrators or the winning vendors in this competitive bid process, they are negotiating those discounts.
And what are the most, is there a common type of medical care provided, or is it the whole continuum from preventive care to critical surgeries?
Right.
Everything covered?
So yes, one of the responsibilities of these TPAs that we're working with is to continue to set up the provider networks just like our health plans do today. And same benefits that state employees have today will continue in the new structure.
Now, how many other states do self-insurance? I think the governor said in his speech Minnesota does?
Yes, they do. And they went to a program that's somewhat similar to what we're proposing here about 10, 15 years ago, and they've seen excellent results. But to go back to your question about how many states self-insure, mm-hmm, about 46 states self-insure in full or in part. About 20 states are completely self-insured.
And the Minnesota experience has been saving money?
It has. It experienced first year cost savings and then minimal increases over time since.
The estimate that it's going to save $60 million, how is that derived? And are you pretty confident about that? Because the governor's budget used that in some, spends that money in,
right,
some pretty critical ways.
I'm actually very comfortable with that estimate. So let's get to your question about how that was derived. It's based on our actuarial estimates. And built into that is our actuary making certain assumptions about what is inflation going to look like over the next few years? What are claims cost growth going to look like over the next few years? In this new structure with fewer vendors, where are our members likely to enroll? So those assumptions are built in. And based on that, our actuary came up with high, low, and mid-level cost savings estimates.
Mm-hmm.
And this $60 million GPR dollar is that mid-range estimate. So I think it's very thoughtful and responsible to focus on that middle range estimate. I also should add that the Affordable Care Act has certain fees and taxes associated that would apply to fully insured plans but not self-insured plans. But given the unknowns about the ACA right now, our cost savings estimate does not factor in any savings associated with the ACA because we simply don't know if those fees will remain in place or go away long term.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. All the debate in Washington, if the Republicans could ever agree on a replacement for Obamacare, is it something that could eventually affect in a major way our self-insurance plan, assuming it's adopted?
Yeah, I don't think outside of the potential for additional cost savings to be generated if those taxes go away, I don't see the debate in Washington as having a huge impact on our program.
Health insurance now, how big of a business is it? What does the state spend on health care, and how much of that is provided by the employer and how much by the employee?
Sure. So our annual premium cost, let's just take 2016, it's about a $1.4 billion program. And I think your question is more focused on the state employee population. As
yes,
I mentioned earlier, we cover, you know, Medicare retirees, pre-Medicare retirees, local government employers as well. But just to focus on the state employee active side, that's about $900 million of the $1.4 billion. And then you further asked, you know, what share is employer versus employee? And right now, the employer picks up about 88% of the premium cost, and the employee picks up 12%. So that brings the state spend down to about $800 million per year.
$800 million.
Yep.
And one of the concerns that I've seen, some legislators have said, going to self-insurance could be volatile because you could have high payouts 1 year and low, and then it could fluctuate wildly. Is that a concern?
I think it's a legitimate concern. I will say in a population of our size, there is a certain level of stability. But specific to whether we would have fluctuations in any given year, especially in the early years of our program, the board has built up a reserve over the past few years with an eye toward the idea of us self-insuring at
Smoothing.
Some point. Yep. So that reserve would be there to absorb those fluctuations in claims costs.
What has been the past experience, maybe the last 3 or 4 years, in terms of the premium increase, the additional cost? Has it been 8, 9, 10, or 4% closer to inflation, CPI?
No, we've been very fortunate. Over the past 10 years, the average annual premium increase has been under 4%. In more recent years, for example, for 2017, our premium went up 1.6% because we had a very successful negotiation cycle last
year.
That's
about the inflation rate.
Yeah, it was. We've been very successful in our program.
How long has the Group Insurance Board been studying this? Has it been, if it's going to save so much money, why haven't we done it 5 or 10 years ago?
Right. So the interest really peaked by the board about 5 years ago in 2012. And to put that into context, if you think about the time, in 2010, the Affordable Care Act went into place. Mm-hmm. And by 2012, the taxes and fees had been not only developed, but starting to be implemented. And so the fact that some of those fees applied to a fully insured program but could be avoided under a self-insured program definitely piqued the board's interest. In addition to that, in 2011 and 12, we did some cost shifting in our program to state employees. So in 2011, the premium contribution for state employees increased from about 6% of premium to 12%.
Right.
And then for 2012, that was the first year that we implemented coinsurance in the program, so employees were paying about 10% of their medical costs. And so given those changes in 2010, 11, and 12, the board became very interested in getting a handle on our cost growth so that we could figure out, does self-insuring make sense, and would that help avoid future cost shift or benefit reductions for state employees?
The video talked about that the state is already self-insuring for dental and
pharmacy.
Yep. Dental and pharmacy and one other program that I don't understand.
Yep, so we have a current program that has broad coverage statewide and nationwide. It's called the Access Plan, and that's been self-insured for many, many years.
Then what about drug and dental? Has the state self-insured for a long time for that?
Yeah, so dental is new as of 2015. So we're fairly new in that experience, but so far that's going very well. And I would consider self-insuring pharmacy to be a highly successful experience. We went to that system in 2004.
Let's talk about the regional approach. This proposal would divide the state into four regions. Mm-hmm. Here's my question. Of the 250,000 people that would be covered, would most be in the south region, and then I think Milwaukee is in the eastern region?
Right.
What percentage would be in each of those proposed regions?
Those are far and away the highest concentration of our employees. So in the southern region, out of the 250,000, it's over 110,000. So nearly half of our population is the Madison and Dane County area. And then we do also have a strong concentration in the Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin area. We have in the very southeastern part of the state about 30,000 members, but in that whole new eastern region, that will be about a third of the ETF membership.
And do you expect the number of providers, let's take the north region, which is north central Wisconsin, would they not have as many providers because they're a lot more rural than the southern region?
So, and this goes back to the analysis that was part of the bid proposals. We had the vendors indicate which of our current providers will continue to be available. And as I said earlier, 98% of the current providers will continue to be available
98%.
In the new structure.
Okay, yep. So yep. Which goes to the question, will I be able to keep my doctor medical
Yeah, and we've learned over the years that that is far and away the most important part of healthcare for our membership. It seems that folks don't mind changing a health plan or insurance carrier, but they really want to know that they continue to see the doctors that they see today.
That they've had a relationship,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, candidly, what is the biggest risk in state government going to a self-insurance plan, Lisa?
I do think it is the fact that we take on the risk for the claims costs. And we mentioned earlier the idea of having a reserve to absorb those fluctuations, but I will also tell you that we are currently in the process of negotiating these contracts, mm-hmm. and there are several other things that we're trying to do in those negotiations to protect the state against future higher claims costs. One is asking the vendors to provide discount guarantees. You asked earlier,
yes.
who negotiates those discounts.
That?
So we're asking them to provide guarantees on the discounts. We're also asking them to adhere to new performance standards beyond what we've had previously. And we also are exploring what's called gain sharing, maybe an easier way to think about it is a shared savings approach, wherein if the vendors bring in healthcare claims costs that are lower than expected, perhaps we could share those savings with them as another incentive.
The having watched the issue in the news for a few years, at one point, there was an estimate from a consultant who talked to the board that this could actually lose a significant amount of money. Can you explain the context of that, please?
Absolutely. And that goes back to, we were talking about 2012 earlier when the board's interest really
got
peaked.
Serious about it?
Yeah. So at that point in time, the board's consulting actuary was Deloitte. And the board asked Deloitte to produce a high-level analysis of whether self-insuring was worth pursuing. It's a very easy read. It's only several pages long, but it was high level, and they did come up with wide-ranging estimates saying that it could save money, it could cost more money. I think the most important recommendation from that analysis was the fact that Deloitte said, we need to gather more data and information to really refine the cost estimate. And so that's what we did. In 2013, Deloitte and ETF issued, we called it a request for information, but we tried to get more granular data that could tell us, would the state likely save or lose in a self-insuring arrangement? And while we did get more data, it was not a formal RFP or competitive bid, so the data was incomplete. Some of our health plans chose to sit out the entire process. The administrative costs involved were not contractually binding, and so it gave us more information, but it did not give us definitive information about whether or not to self-insure. So, again, that was 2013, so the board decided and directed staff to gather more information about our cost drivers, utilization patterns, variation amongst our health plans, which led to, in 2014, ETF hiring Siegel Consulting as a benefit consultant to help us with that analysis. And last year, Siegel, stick with me, Siegel produced two reports which were meant to look at long-term potential restructuring and potential cost savings opportunities for the state. And they too came up with an estimate on what self-insuring could save. But here's where the two actuaries absolutely agreed. The only way you're going to get real cost information to know whether self-insuring would save the state money is to do a formal competitive bid or a request for proposal. And so that's what we did in 2016,
okay.
Which brings us to today. So yeah, there have been different estimates over time, but that's exactly why we went out with a competitive bid, because we want to know what this really would save or cost.
Since the governor formally recommended on the same day the group insurance board recommended it, I've heard a couple concerns. Number one, there might be a loss of jobs. Have you heard that concern, and is it valid concern?
In the health insurance industry?
Yes.
So,
yeah, excuse me.
Here's
yeah,
what's interesting. I think it's important to delineate who will continue to be participating in our program and who will be out. So we are planning to work with fewer insurers. So instead of the 17 HMOs, and then we also have a self-insured contract for that access plan. So instead of those 18 insurance carriers, we are going down to 6. However, as we talked about earlier, the providers that are available today will continue to be available in the new program. The health systems they work for will continue to be participating in the program. So many of the players that currently participate will continue to exist in our program. The only piece of this that really is cut out is the number of insurers we're working with.
The other concern is that when you self-insure for $250,000, you potentially upset the healthcare market providing insurance to local government employees, that could change the dynamics, maybe raise their rates. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I have to say that I would hope that the state is not currently subsidizing low health care costs.
Cost sharing?
Yeah. So it's an interesting argument, but I haven't seen definitive proof that that is the case.
Okay. Now let's talk about what happens next. Now, it's part of the governor's budget, so joint finance has to load it into the governor's 2017-2019
right.
budget.
Right.
That's not going to happen, let's say, for 2.5 months, maybe 3 months.
Right.
If it is approved, isn't that a pretty short timeline to switch over $250,000? Because this self-insurance would start on January 1, correct?
Right, right. So timeline is key, so I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to it. Let's do this chronologically. So as I said, we've already kicked off contract negotiations with the TPAs because the Joint Finance Committee has indicated that they would prefer we have those contract negotiations complete before we bring it to them for that next step in the process.
Mm-hmm.
The Group Insurance Board has also indicated to Joint Finance that it would be preferable to have a decision as to whether they are going to accept or reject self-insuring by May of this year.
Oh, prior to
July 1.
Early sign.
That would be great.
Oh, because
as you can imagine, and I think that's what you're alluding to, not only the outreach and communication effort with our members, which will be unprecedented, but also there are a host of IT systems, data transmission issues that need to be worked out. The earlier we can get an indication, the better. I will say that at the end of the day, we have to provide a health insurance program in 2018. So if we find ourselves in early May not knowing which way joint finance is likely to head, we will have to kick off our regular annual negotiation process and work on a parallel path to make sure we're ready for whatever outcome.
Parallel path. One assumes self-insurance and the other assumes status quo?
It assumes fully insuring, but that doesn't necessarily mean the status quo.
Okay. Well, has joint finance, has the leadership told you that it's reasonable to ask for a preliminary decision that you can plan by May 15th?
Do I
hear you say May 15th, somewhere in May?
Sometime in May would
okay.
be great.
Okay.
But I do not have an indication from joint finance as to whether they think that's agreeable.
Well, let's talk to the average state employee out there watching this show.
Right.
If it's approved, what'll happen to make her, since you said the demographic is
sure.
a woman, to make her aware of, because it can be pretty scary. So what's the outreach to inform her of her options and next steps?
Sure. So
other than watching wonderful ETF videos.
That'll be a part of it. I should say we aren't waiting for May or July 1 to start our communication effort. Literally the day of the Group Insurance Board decision, we started to push out information to our members. We have an email listserv that folks can sign up for and get not only things like frequently asked questions, mm-hmm. but also links to the video you showed earlier. So our communication effort is already underway. Once we do have a final decision, we will be working closely with those new vendors to help us with that outreach and communication strategy, because we want all of our members, by the time we make that fall enrollment period in October, to know where their provider is located, if that's what's important to them, what their premium costs are, and what their options are. And so that effort will start as soon as we have a definitive decision, and with an eye toward making sure our members are prepared for the fall enrollment period.
And that'll be the same whether you're an active state employee or whether you are retired?
Absolutely. Everyone is impacted by this change in the program.
The enrollment period, do you envision starting dropping the flag when and ending it when?
It is likely not going to be that different from a typical fall enrollment period, which is generally been October. If we feel we're prepared to start earlier, we may do that. If we feel that we need more time for communication before we start the enrollment, perhaps we'll push it back. So we haven't formally designated the enrollment period because we wanted to see how things panned out over the next few months.
And I don't want to be a downer, but how will you know whether it's not going to save the anticipated $60 million from January 1 of 18 to June 30 of 19?
Right.
What'll be the first indicator of whether you're on track to save $60 million or not so much?
So I will say when we will absolutely know is after the close of the first calendar year of the program. What did the claims costs look like, and what would our costs likely have been under our previous structure? But that said, we'll be tracking the claims cost over the course of year one of the program and may have some early indications about whether they're coming in as they would in a typical year, or higher or lower.
The $60 million savings, does it come from dropping dealing with 18 HMOs down to six?
So it's...
what do you call them, TPAs?
Yeah, third-party administrators.
Third-party administrators, okay.
Yeah.
Is that where the savings comes? Excuse me.
Yeah, so the savings really come back to your earlier question about the discounts, and it is linked to which TPAs would be in the program. So those preferred vendors that we plan to work with not only were high in terms of quality, but also indicated that they had the greatest discounts with providers. And so that's absolutely right that we expect a good chunk of those savings to come from the fact that we are steering our members toward the TPAs with the best discounts and therefore hopefully lowest claims costs.
You anticipate driving down the cost of health care?
No.
No.
And
okay.
If I said that, I'm glad you corrected me.
You didn't, but no. I'm just trying to clarify.
I would say contain future growth. I know that sounds a little buzzwordy, but...
contain future growth.
Yeah, I'd never expect to actually outright save money in health care.
And then let's work the other side. If for whatever reason the capital policymakers do not approve self-insurance, mm-hmm. then what's going to happen then?
So as I said... I shouldn't leave the group insurance board out of this. It will be a group insurance board discussion as to how they want to proceed. And that brings to mind your comment earlier about would it just be the fully insured status quo. Mm-hmm. I should highlight the fact that the Joint Finance Committee purview is focused on whether or not we self-insure. The group insurance board could still decide that regionalizing our program, which would likely lead to fewer insurers, they could still move ahead with that. So if we find out that the Joint Finance Committee is not going to approve self-insuring, we would discuss with the board whether they want to proceed with the regional aspect of the restructure.
Okay, maybe we should end the show this way. I think this issue is so complex, and because it deals with people's health care, I think you should talk to the state employee who's heard about self-insurance and tell she or he what to look for and what next steps, assuming that it's approved by the policymakers in the Capitol.
Right. I would say please go to the ETF website, sign up for any information sources that we have available there to make sure that you're getting information as soon as we have it. We're trying to push information out as much as we can, even if it's to say we don't have all the answers yet. So I would say going to our website is the best way to stay in touch. I should also emphasize the fact that we know not all of our members consider the internet as their preferred or primary source of information. So again, as we get more concrete information, we'll also be having, you know, mailings and other hard distribution methods to get the word out.
Pretty exciting change for you as a administrator?
It's huge. It is huge. And you know, we are very focused on making this a positive experience for our members, including the transition. And so it's a big change, but we are ready for it.
Well, thank you very much. Lisa Ellinger is Director of the Employee Trust Fund's Office of Strategic Health Policy. This is a major change, and I want to thank you for coming and explaining it to 250,000 Wisconsin residents.
Yeah.
Well, state residents plus, right?
Yep.
Okay. Lisa, thank you very much.
Thanks.